Big Fat Five. What is up? Welcome back to Big Fat Five, a podcast financially supported by Big Fat Snare Drum. My name is Ben Hilsinger, and this week's guest is Travis Orban. Travis is a progressive, metal-leaning drummer who's recorded and or performed with Of Legends, Sky Eats Airplane, Periphery, and many more heavy hitters. He's probably the most technically proficient drummer we've had on the show, but he's also up there as one of the most creative and prolific. He records videos for a lot of his recording sessions, so you can see exactly what he's doing, and the way he sets up his kit is also very unique, often being described as a minimalist, quasi-open stance kit. He's very well studied in his craft as both a drummer and composer, and so I hope you enjoy the five-ish records that helped shape Travis Orban into the musician he is today. Cheers. So, Travis, for this list, what was your criteria for an album to even be in the running and then ultimately make the top five?
Well, it was pretty difficult to wade through the sludge in my brain
and yeah,
chronologically illustrate everything that shaped me. Some of these were obvious, kind of no-brainers, but the difficulty was kind of exacerbated in the fact that I also compose and release my own music. And so it kind of became a challenge of like delineating, is this a drumming influence or like a drumming and compositional influence? So what I did was I picked four of the no-brainers, as I said, and then my fifth entry is, it kind of doubles as a drumming and compositional influence.
I love it. I guess I'll follow up on this. What does it mean for a track to be orbanated, which is what people have coined your style of doing things?
Well, that term comes from my days in Periphery. Someone in that form of the band, that lineup, conjured up that term, and it kind of stuck. And at the time, it was, I would take the program parts from the demos in the band, and then I would put my own idiosyncratic touch on it. And that term just kind of followed me around.
Well, let's just hop into your five, because I really want people to know where the hell all of your ideas come from. And like you said, one of them is kind of a little more all-encompassing. So let's just go to the first one. And I guess you did kind of mention it before. Is this in chronological order of how they were introduced to you?
Precisely.
Love it. I love it. All right. So the album is And Justice for All. The artist is Metallica. The release year is 1988, and the key tracks that you pointed out, because I forced you to pick some, were One and Frayed Ends of Sanity, and of course the drummer's Mr. Lars Ulrich. So take it away. Where were you? How old were you? What tickled your fancy about this record? And yeah, floor's yours.
So I was in love with the Black album at this point. I was exposed to that through MTV, and also my dad had it, and he would blare it in his huge truck as we'd skedaddle around the neighborhood. But it wasn't the drumming that struck me or I felt like was vying for my attention. It was the record as a whole, you know, the vibe or whatever. Maybe because it was like the heaviest music I had ever heard in my little 8-year-old mind. So I loved the Black album, and I saved up some money and just on a whim got the Injustice for All cassette and popped it in. This record was made well before they had like huge airplay and before they were an international act or a household name. Mm-hmm. And so it was difficult to find any sort of information, or like I had never seen a video or heard any of the songs. But like I said, on a whim, I just picked it up. It's just, this is what I call the sine qua non. This is the bridge that helped me realize I wanted to become a drummer. Like I had never air drummed to anything in my life. Mm-hmm. I had kind of beaten aimlessly on household objects and on desks in school and such, but this was like I don't know, something impelled me after listening to this record. And so would I have become a drummer without it? Perhaps, but this is the one that prompted that realization. Let's do The Frayed Ends of Sanity.
Okay. Have you ever seen Metallica in concert?
I've seen them twice. The first time was 96 or 7. They were touring on Load. And then the second time was in 2003, I think. Both times were great, but I really liked the first time because, well, it's the first time. And also they had this production that was very theatrical. I think it's documented on some video release, but they had a tech like come out and pretend like he was on fire or something.
Jesus.
And the whole like concert got shut down in like the middle of a song, and they would come back out and they would lower like one light bulb at a time for each member, and they would like click it on. And it was just this whole, you know, theatrical histrionic production. And I got to see it in person. So it was.
Hell yeah. Fun. All right, so number two, and this is going to be from a video series, and this is Serious Moves, the VHS. The artist is Dennis Chambers, but in this one it is a song that they play from a John Scofield record, Blue Matter, and the release year is 92, and they're playing the song Trim. Yeah, when did you get this? All that jazz.
So this was within my first year of drumming, and I had saved up some money. I went to a local mom-and-pop instrument store, and I just wanted a drum instructional video. I was, you know, browsing the store, and then I saw that there were drum instructional videos, and I didn't know that such a thing existed. And so then I began perusing the selection, and I noticed, for whatever reason, the Serious Moves VHS like jumped out at me. I was like, that's the one I want. So I plopped down my hard-earned money and got it, went home, and this song we're about to hear is the first song. It's the one that opens the video. The band that performs in this is I think it's the band that Scofield had for both Blue Matter and Loud Jazz and Pick Hits, which is a live record. Maybe the keyboardist is different, but Dennis and I think his name is Gary Granger, the bassist, they were the rhythm section on all three of those. And firstly, just the combination of those guys is dynamite. But with Dennis, it was just the playing was so over my head and so much was like inscrutable to me, but it still hooked me. Like I knew I was witnessing magic, and he had such brio. I don't know what it was. And, you know, this was something totally sort of foreign to me. Like my parents didn't listen to jazz or jazz fusion. It was just, yeah, it was like a language that I had never heard before or something. And that held a lot of allure and intrigue for me. And so I was hooked, and that VHS inhabited my VCR at least once a week. I'd even make my friends come over and sit through it.
You're not paying attention. I guess back then you didn't have a phone, so put your Walkman down. I don't know.
Yeah, it's mostly a performance video. There's some instructional tips kind of scattered throughout, but it's largely a performance. And there's a companion VHS or DVD I think it's called Funky Pocket or something like that. I don't know. The name escapes me, but it doesn't have the as outlandish playing as Serious Moves does. So I'm glad I don't think they had it at the time, but I'm glad I got Serious Moves.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's Trim.
Yeah, later on in that track, there's a drum solo over a vamp. I wish I could just go back in time and live in that moment the first time I saw that solo. It's something else.
Well, for everyone listening, it is a 9-minute song, so I can't play the whole thing, but I will link to it in the show notes, and so people go check out that vamp solo that you were just referencing. But let's go to number three, and the album is Soul Vaccination by A Tower of Power Live is the full title. And the artist is, of course, Tower of Power. Release here is 1999. Few key tracks, Soul Vaccination and So Very Hard to Go, and Mr. David Garibaldi. So take it away.
So Garibaldi was, I didn't realize it at the time, but he was kind of like a backwards bridge to Chambers. There's a lot of Garibaldi influence in Chambers. Years later, I caught a video of him, Chambers, substituting for Garibaldi in Tower of Power, and then it clicked for me. I was like, oh, of course. Of course he loves Tower of Power. So Garibaldi for me was more approachable than Dennis, you know. he's kind of like a lesson in subtlety, whereas Lars in his own manner and Chambers in his own manner, they kind of like bleed machismo. They're just like, you know, they're in there. Mm-hmm. But Garibaldi, he sneaks in his licks. And so there's a lot of, you know, subtly complex 16th bass patterns and layers happening, but he plays them with such aplomb and with that magic Garibaldi touch that just makes it all groove along. And another big thing was studying his playing and transcribing it and playing along with it made me realize that, like, yeah, I played Ghost Notes before, but I was barely cognizant of it. It was just this thing that I just kind of peppered in. And he used them as like major components of a groove. Like, you give this its proper subdivision because it's an inherent part of the groove. That was a big lesson for me.
Which song would you want to play?
Let's do Soul Vaccination.
All right.
Cut down on the infection, 'cause it's soon we got, it's all perfection. Hey, we're talking about soul vaccination.
This record was huge for me growing up too. I mean, even just the first track, Soul with a Capital S, is just so good.
Oh yeah, man. I would play along to that. Ugh, so much fun. And that another thing that he did a lot was he would play off of the bow of the ride. Like he would traverse between the bow and the bell of the ride. And like he would make up a lot of patterns like that. Mm-hmm. And again, like the ghost notes are like components of the actual groove. And that was another like thing that really impacted me back then. It's a really small detail, but it's not at the same time.
Sure. And I still, I mean, Future Sounds is still a huge part of my practice routine. Hey, y'all, I wanted to talk to you about a drum I've recently received from Preston at Vessel Drum Co. It's an Ocean Patinaed 14x5.5 snare drum, and it's incredible. It's got a 1.5mm shell, brass shell, with 10 lugs, chrome over brass triple flange hoops, a trick three-position strainer, 42-strand wires. It's lovely. It's loud, and it cuts and records as beautiful as a piece of butter cake. And Preston, actually, this is why it's called the Ocean Patina, is he covers the shell with seaweed and then drops it in the ocean for a certain period of time, and then it patinas with all these crazy cool designs. And if you all remember, Preston was actually one of the first guests on the podcast. When I first started out, I didn't really know what the Big Fat Five format was going to be or if it was going to be even Big Fat Five at all. But I went to his garage, his you know, where he makes all of his drums. It was really cool. He walked me through. The episode is essentially from start to finish what happens with a drum. And it was a really fun episode. It's now archived at bigfatsnaredrum.com just because it doesn't fit the format of Big Fat Five. I want you to get back to the show, but go check it out. This drum is beautiful, and he actually let me use it on an Eve 6 tour, and I didn't keep it, and I regretted it ever since then, just because I was trying to pinch pennies at the time, and I just kept thinking about it, and so the opportunity to get it again was presented, and it is one of my favorite drums. So the Ocean Patinaed 14x5.5 snare drum, check it out. Reach out to me, go to Vessel Drum Co. The Instagram's just at Vessel Drum Co. And check it out. It's amazing. It's beautiful. Sounds great. Bye. Forks Drum Closet, Nashville's full-line drum store. Celebrating its 40th year in business, Forks is independently owned and operated in the heart of Music City. Specializing in drums and percussion, Forks offers great discounts on all major brands and will beat any retailer's advertised price. From new and used equipment, vintage drums, and marching and orchestral instruments, Forks has something for every drummer. They offer professional rental, repair, and restoration services, as well as drum lessons. Stop by their storefront at 308 Chestnut Street, Nashville, Tennessee, zip code 37210. Or go online at ForksDrumCloset.com. All the information I just said is at ForksDrumCloset.com. All right, so this next one was, and you kind of explained it, how this is two records, but kind of in one choice. But yeah, just maybe just talk about Virgil Donati as a whole, and then we'll talk about the specifics afterwards.
So my first exposure to Virgil was the Modern Drummer 1997 Festival Highlights video. Every drummer would basically put on a clinic, mm-hmm. whether it was a performance with a band or just a nerdy drum clinic. On this particular festival, there were a few different drummers, obviously John Tempesta, Tony Royster Jr., Horacio Hernandez. In the highlights, they would be given like maybe two songs. Virgil is the one that, like, I mean, talk about inscrutability. I mean, I think my mind like formulated a Rolodex at that time. I was like, file this under for later viewing because right now I don't understand what's going on, but I love it.
Yeah.
And so a few years later, it was like the height of file sharing and the details are a little hazy, but what I would do is I would find some sort of obscure music, and if I enjoyed it, I would buy the CD. Mm-hmm. If you're buying obscure stuff like that, like Planet X, On the Verge, Screaming Headless Torsos, weird shit that isn't in your local FYE, then you got to go to some place online. And in my case, it was this place called Audiophile Imports. I got a lot of CDs from them, and I can't remember if I downloaded On the Verge or if I ordered the Planet X CD because I was familiar with, you know, Virgil as a drummer. But I just remember consuming both of those albums around the same time. And yeah, I don't know. I've said a lot about Virgil over the years, and he is what I've come to describe as my gun to the head favorite drummer. Like, you got a gun to your head, you got to pick a favorite guy. It would be him. He's just always evolving, always pushing himself, just a monkish dedication to his craft. It's been evident for a long time, but that your first exposure to that sort of intense ascetic lifestyle that he's devoted himself to, when you get that in your blood for the first time, it's just like you're never the same. So I consume both of those records around the same time, and I've been kind of like a Virgil fanboy ever since.
All right, so the album, I'll go for the first album. The album is Serious Young Insects, and it's by On the Verge, Verge spelled V-I-R-G, and the release here is 99, and you chose Native Metal for that one, so I will play Native Metal right now. Is On the Verge versus Planet X is one of his more solo projects, the other one's more of a band environment, or what's the difference between On the Verge and Planet X?
So, to my knowledge, On the Verge was just kind of like a side project that Virgil had in Australia. I believe all the members are natives of Oz. In fact, I just watched that video for the first time where he's in a Dream Theater cover band, and half the players are from this project. And so when he relocated to Los Angeles in like 99, maybe it was sooner than that, around then. And Derek Sherinian, the former keyboardist of Dream Theater, he got him to play on, I can't remember if it was the whole record or a couple tracks, but he had a solo record called Planet X. And that was his first collaboration with Virgil.
Okay.
And he's like, let's just make this into a full thing, full-fledged thing. And so he got Tony McAlpine on guitar, who was insane, absurd. And then it was kind of a revolving door of bassists, but it was Tom Kennedy, surprisingly. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's played with like Dave Weckl and tons of other people. I don't like making declarative statements, or I try to avoid making them, but I think he is the last guy to come along and like completely wholly elevate our craft.
I need to get into more Virgil. I appreciate your affirmation there. So number six, whatever, the album is Joe's Garage. The artist is Mr. Frank Zappa, who you somewhat mentioned earlier. The release year is 1979. The key track, Catholic Girls, and Vinnie Colaiuta. And then, yeah, go ahead. We'll listen to it after you take it away.
So, yeah, I did mention that my dad was not an avid Zappa fan, but he had a few records. And I vaguely remember, I think, listening to Apostrophe. I just thought it was funny. You know, the lyrics were funny. That was, like, the lasting impression that I had. But I was a kid. And so when I was, like, in my late teens, early 20s, then I started really delving into Zappa. And to my knowledge, this was Colaiuta's first recording, or at least his first, like, his national debut, so to speak. I think he went to Berkeley for a bit and then auditioned for Zappa, and he got the gig because Vinnie Colaiuta. This is, again, like a gun to the head kind of decision, like pick a favorite Zappa record. This would be it. It has everything. It has the off-kilter experimental stuff, the wild, outlandish time signatures, the wild outlandish playing from everyone, but it also has great lyrics, great melodies. It's the whole package. I love Colaiuta's drum sound in this. It's not typical Colaiuta. I'm guessing either he hadn't figured out his drum sound, or maybe this was Zappa's doing, like how he wanted the record to sound. But they sound very rich, and the whole record does. I mean, the record is phenomenally mixed and recorded. Yeah, this is the thing that I mentioned earlier. This doubles as like a drum and compositional influence, because when I was talking about being exposed to Virgil and his undying work ethic, once you get exposed to the industrial Frank Zappa, as he likes to describe himself, industrial strength, you're changed forever. And the main thing he taught me, I'd say, to be is just to be fearless. Just, you know, compose with all your might, with every intention to not give a fuck and just do what makes you happy. And Colaiuta was right along in tow to help support that.
Yeah, I wish we had Frank here with everything that's going on in the music industry and all the music getting taken advantage of. And I think he'd have a lot to say. And I wish he was here to talk about it.
Yeah, he's someone that I sometimes find myself missing as if he were a family member of some kind, mm-hmm. or relative. But yeah, he would undoubtedly have a lot to say about the state of matters.
Yes, for sure. All right, well, here's Catholic Girls.
Well, half a leg girl,
with a tiny little
so. Yeah, he's just having fun. And none of their mamas ever seem to know. Oh, nice. Gets a shout out. Oh, there it is.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, the rhythmically was pretty tame till now. And I did want to mention or bring up one of your honorable mentions. Mr. Bungle's California record came out in 1999. So talk a little bit about that. We'll play some Mr. California or Mr. Bungle, and then I'll let you get back to, I'm assuming you're a busy day. You're always recording and filming. So go ahead.
Oh, okay. So Mr. Bungle, I was a massive Faith No More fan and kind of a de facto, you know, Patton fanboy as a result of that. And
is that the lead singer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I started consuming some, because he has a myriad of side projects. So I started checking some of those out, and one of those was Mr. Bungle, which was actually his first band. He was in Bungle and then joined Faith No More. And so I got at the time all three of their records. The first two are, it's hard to even put it into words. The first one's like jazz meets calliope music meets experimentalism meets art rock avant-garde. It's just all over the place. There's multiple genres in every song, and John Zorn produced it, and it's just a mind fuck. And the second one is that on testosterone and steroids and all those performance enhancing drugs. It's just fucking out there to the point to where it's largely unlistenable, I think, to many people. Like it sounds like they set out to terrorize the listener. And you can start to hear some other influences sort of creep in, like a lot of film score composition. But the third one, I think, is their creative zenith for me. It's like they took the best elements of both of those records and streamlined each song into something that doesn't terrorize the listener. And I got those three records in, I think it was the late aughts, maybe early 2010s. And California just, it took a few listens. Maybe I was scarred from the first two. I enjoy those now, but California is just, it became one of my like all time favorite records, like probably within top five. Like it's dear to me.
Which song would you want to play?
Well, it's, coincidentally enough, I just covered one. It's called, I think, Ars Moriendi. But we can play, let's get into some weird Motown. Do Vanity Fair. God, I should know this.
Yeah, Vanity Fair is the second to last song.
Yeah, that's the one. Let's do that.
All right, here we go.
There's some strangeness coming up. The snaps.
Oh, there it is. That's your top six. And if people do want to reach out to you and they want to get to know you a little more, how can people find you? Where can they see you? Maybe talk a little bit about the future of Travis a little bit.
Well, if you want to see me in person, I'm going on tour in a couple of weeks, actually. I'll be on tour with my band, Darkest Hour, direct support for Exodus and Fit for an Autopsy. It's a U.S. tour. I think there's maybe one date in Canada. So that's, you can see me on the road if you'd like, or just go to travisorban.com. That is the hub, and I'll take you to my website, obviously, which is like a kind of like an archive, and it'll lead you to all of my social media outlets.
All right, man. Well, I'll let you go. This was so fun, dude. You are an incredible drummer. Like, I was watching you the last few nights, so intimidated. You're amazing, man. So I'm really excited to see. I mean, you obviously have a blooming career, but where you go, and yeah, man, it's an honor for sure.
Well, thank you kindly. That's very kind and gracious of you.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon, dude.
Thanks again for having me.
No problem, man. Peace.
Bye.
All right, this week's Big Fat Favorite is from Petar Janic, and his choice was the album Love Symbol. Release year is 1992. The artist is Prince. Song choice is Sexy MF, and the drummer is Michael Bland. So here's what Petar had to say. This is another example of funk at its finest. Michael Bland is such a machine and musical drummer. Every single hit, crash, and fill serves the song. Not to mention, Sexy MF was recorded without a click. These cats are locked, the time is not moving, and Michael is driving the bus. From the first hit into the verse to the sax solo outro where he switches to the ride bell, this groove is driving and not slowing down. It's so funky. All right, here's Sexy MF. In a word or two, you, I wanna do. No, not your body, your mind, your fool. Come here, baby, yeah. You sexy motherfucker. We're all alone in a villa on the Riviera. Got some friends on the south side in case you cared. Out of all of your friends, I wanna be the closest. That's why I tell you things so you'll be the mostest. When it comes to life, to be this man's wife, you got to be well educated on the subject of fights. I mean the prevention of, in other words, it's R.E.M. meaning of this thing called love. Are you up on this? If so, then you can get up off a hug and a kiss. Come here, babe. Yeah. You sexy motherfucker. Come here, babe. Yeah. You sexy motherfucker. And that's the show. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, do that. It helps more people find the show, so it'll get bigger and better, and hopefully I'll have a chance to sell out one day. But you'll be an OG listener that can brag to all your friends. Anyways, why don't you go and check us out at BigFatSnareDrum.com and follow us on all the socials. Just search for Big Fat Snare Drum and you will find us. The show is edited in part using Isotope RX Audio Editor. It's amazing, so go check that out at isotope.com. And thanks again to Gunnar Olson for the theme music. Bye!